Hey, what's up? This is Menle Golakai Agri.
And this is Lauren Yoshiko, and you're listening to Broccoli Talk, a podcast for cannabis lovers.
Today, we are talking about the future of weed. And before we get into all of that, we would like to take a pause and just reflect on our current reality.
Which is kind of bittersweet.
Very bittersweet, very beautiful, but this will be our last episode for a while, maybe a long time, and maybe there will be other ways for us to connect very soon. And in any case, stay tuned and keep up with us on Instagram, email, in person, I don't know. Let's still be able to connect as much as we can.
Yes, the Broccoli and the Broccoli Talk community lives on. It's you guys and us, and we're still going to be in our usual internet places doing our usual weed thing. So, we'll be around and we'll see you. And if you work or are interested in staying tuned with cannabis business and culture, you can always subscribe to my newsletter, The Broccoli Report. Another aspect of this current reality is it was amazing to really see this community in numbers when some people shared their Spotify wraps. Whenever somebody left a review, we would instantly text it to each other with our hearts feeling so full.
So full.
Every single time you guys sent us a comment or left a review or left a star, it got through to us and it meant a lot and we really appreciate it. And we're going to miss you a lot, but we're here. It's not time to get too sappy just yet. Shall we get into our Future of Weed episode? Oh, wait, we're going to say it together. Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Let's get it.
Let's get it. Well, what a year. We're going to get a little bit sentimental at the start, because I'm really curious what your favorite episodes of this year or ever are. Personally, mine, I gotta say, the cannabis and spirituality one is definitely at the top of the list.
Yes.
It ended up just being like a cool exploration of like people's relationships with like the plant, the natural world as well, and like how just nature factors into my like a religious sense of spirituality. But a lot of unexpected people, I think, enjoyed that one and found us through that one. And then, man, if you've like ever needed a 101 on social justice, criminal justice, the difference between those things, understanding what like the word equity really means, the episode with Natalie Papillon, I think it's just called Cannabis Equity, was a really great breakdown in very conversational terms. She gives a lot of helpful metaphors that helped me wrap my head around this, a lot of this language that is suddenly such a rich part of the weed culture.
That was really strong and very informative in that supportive way that, like you said, is so necessary. It's like the backbone of this culture for sure.
What about you? Are there any other favorites?
I know we were just recently talking about the Rhythm Nation episode, and I think I have to jump on that wagon and say that that was one of my favorites as well.
That's a hidden gem.
It was very raw, where I think both of us were exploring and processing our ideas of shame surrounding the stigma.
Oh yeah, and to clarify, that episode is about like schedules and routines and
yes.
Personal rhythms.
That's the foundation.
Yes, that was a low key great one. Yeah, we really, I feel like, did some destigmatization work in that one. I'm proud of that one.
Very proud of that one. Another sort of sparkly favorite as well was the cannabis history episode that we dived into, which I think could have been its own sort of offshoot. But that was really fun to kind of research and explore and I think uncover together and with the audience. I think a lot of folks were excited about that one just as much as we were.
Absolutely. I think the title was Cannabis History in Mexico and Africa.
Yes, exactly.
That's a good one to look up, especially if you liked that last episode with Yardi World.
I think when it comes to cannabis in so many ways, sometimes things are like too ahead of its time, right? Too ahead of its time for legislation, for, you know, massive acceptance in society, et cetera. I'm curious, are there any episodes that you felt like were ahead of their time?
Yes, for sure. Because one of my first interviews, I think it's in the first few episodes, was with Olivia Jesler, who founded The Future of Smell.
Yes.
And she just is like a scent scientist, anthropologist, researcher, designer. It's like the weird like psychology of scent in retail spaces and all that stuff. But most interestingly, we talked about why the smell of weed is so polarizing, which I am obsessed with, not just because I get complaints from my neighbors and it haunts my day-to-day life and rentals. But I really think that it is like a interesting clash of Western and Eastern culture, because one thing she talks about is how like unscented products are just like a weirdly American thing. Like it is very Western to not like the smell of things and be like, I just want it to be nothing. And we're like scared of rich smells in an interesting way to me. And that's like definitely going to still be a part of the conversation as new states come online. There's other people like me in rental populations everywhere that are dealing with like smoking weed at home is the only place to legally do it in most states that are coming online. And they have to figure out a way to allow people to legally consume these things without landlords just making it illegal everywhere. But then we've also got like people, you know, advocating for legislation and zoning rules that keeps the smell out of their neighborhood. And like, boy, that's just a real Pandora's box to me. I smell pee walking around most downtowns and we're more upset about a waft of weed. Like, what is that's like something I think that will continue to be an issue. And we really got into back in, I don't know, 2018.
You're right. It is, for pun purposes only, a very potent episode, way ahead of its time, especially as we're really figuring this out and continuing to remember how like sterile and full of stigma our society is.
Okay, so let's talk about the future of weed. What we're thinking about looking into 2023 and beyond.
The future of weed is so, who knows? It's like looking into a crystal ball. One of the things I obviously have been thinking about a lot when it comes to both cannabis and I think the intersection of reproductive care, it seems to be trending. And not to mention, you know, feeling like things are ahead of its time, I think products and brands that were caring for people with wombs, people who had periods through cannabis products, like it was almost ahead of its time. Whoopi and Maya, I clearly think of that at this point was like almost starting R&D 10 years ago.
Totally.
You know, but I do feel that more and more people are, you know, recognizing that we're tired of like living silently in pain when it comes to our cycles. And herb is like that go-to when it comes to pain, right? Like I think of weed all the time when I think of pain relief, especially for cramps. It's something we've been doing, you know, again, people with wombs traditionally for centuries. But it is seeing this boom, I think, as the wellness like trend is sort of reaching its popularity and rise to like a fever pitch. I love to see that intersection of cannabis and womb care and reproductive care. I love to see brands like Enough Periods and Lumi and obviously Chula, Days, Hemingway, I don't know, Foria, even when you think of like sexual wellness, that's all totally reproductive care. And I'm obviously turned on by this, just a little.
I agree. And it's like finally, because on one hand, like pain was always the entry point for weed, but we just associated it with like cancer and like arthritis, like different kinds of pain, never like womb care, like you said. But it's a very logical application. And now I think this is an entry point for a lot of women that have never tried weed before. They're like, all right, well, if this is, I need to try something other than goddamn Midol, like I'll try anything at this point. Like I do think it's a new entry point that people just weirdly weren't paying attention to before.
Yeah.
I mean, weirdly. They've been late to care about us for a minute.
They have been late to care about us. I think it's an eye roll too, right? Because the market for these products is massive, and that's kind of at the intersection of why it seems so exciting. Yeah.
We get a period every month. We literally have reasons to buy this shit monthly. It's like more frequent than hair
Facts.
Products.
Facts. So we'll see. I'm excited to see where it goes. And in that realm, right, reproductive care, womb care, there's also the care of people who give birth, who are pregnant. And that's very touchy, but it's interesting when you think about like the trend of cannabis and the future of cannabis through that lens.
We've had this joke about like making vapes for soccer moms the last few years of this legal
yes.
realm, but it is so much more complicated than that. And while sure there's like that going on, I mean, in states that have not legalized yet, it is so goddamn scary. Like we did an episode talking about that with one, I think it was called Cannabis and Motherhood. And
yep.
And she kind of touched on that too, that it's just like crazy how much dicier it is for moms. Like in report research, I see these stories of like a pregnant woman being caught with weed when she gets pulled over and like spending 3 months in jail. I really hope that we are able to get more research in place and clarity for moms' sakes, because right now it's such limited research that it's all, you know, really fear-based.
Right.
It's all, I read an interesting take, the head chief editor-in-chief of Reason Journal like authored all of it, and she was like, look, when you really look at all of the research being done on cannabis and pregnancy, cannabis and motherhood, the goal with every single study is figuring out how is this bad for children. It's never researching like, is this doing any good for the mother?
Right.
Is it resulting in, you know, maybe a better pregnancy in the end because the mother's in a better state of mind? Like that's never the goal of the study. It's very much like, how can we show it's really bad for kids, honestly? Like it's very biased research thus far. And so I just want to get to a point where moms can like ask a question about weed in a doctor's office without getting put on like a watch list for fucking CPS.
It's so much. And it speaks to the agency that moms and people, you know, who are pregnant don't have over their own bodies, and, you know, almost treating them like a vessel in a sense for these humans that are going to be created
exactly.
rather than like what's this overall holistic approach to care. It's a lot. It's definitely the future. it should have been the present.
Yeah. So we know that's going to be just continually being a big issue moving forward that is only going to get messier if we don't get some clarity.
Yeah.
Okay, what else? What else are we chatting today?
I think that the future of cannabis and weed and mota and marijuana are also so intertwined with the future of psychedelics.
Yeah, definitely.
There are so many moments where cannabis, in my own personal use and experience throughout this, you know, I don't know, 30 years of use. Oh my gosh. No. 28 years of use has felt at times like psychedelic in its sense of, you know, it changing the realm of the way that I think of my brain, of like my present state. And I talked to a friend once, and it was comedic, and I think it also feeds into the stigma of like just getting so fucked up on weed because it's such a potent herb. But you know, it will take you to that realm. It can definitely take you to that realm, much like psychedelics do. And we are seeing such a boom when it comes to psychedelics and mushrooms and mushies as a trend and as a future sort of plant medicine vessel. You know, the green wave. I am not one for predictions, but I do see a slump, right, a little bit in it, as I think traditional psychedelics are having a major moment in our culture of plant medicine by and large. And it's a good thing. I think a lot of people think that thanks to cannabis legislation, there has been sort of more favorable social and political environment where psychedelic reform can really be maybe more successful
yeah.
than cannabis reform. I don't know. It's a multi-billion dollar like industry, I guess they're saying. And that reminds me so much of those early days of weed and marijuana legislation, right? Like in this sort of infant industry phase. But it just seems a little bit more promising because
yeah.
there is a lot more excitement when it comes to investors and sort of companies sort of jumping ship to psychedelics.
They have. It's like at first it was like, okay, weed is going to pave the way and show this model of going medical to rec that mushrooms and psychedelics can follow. And that has already just not been the case.
Right.
It may be in the longer term, but we've got, like, in Oregon, you know, our psychedelic law is strictly through the medical system. Doctors will have to prescribe it. You will only be administered it in, like, doctor-supervised spaces, which is, I mean, great for therapeutic advancements. Like, I'm really happy for the people that, and they've already started doing it. I've seen some bizarre,
like what?
Bizarre images in local papers of like a family of Oregonians, like blindfolded in like a hospital waiting room, just like tripping balls and talking through their issues. And that's beautiful. But the sort of slump we're experiencing right now in like, okay, the hype is leaving. Broadly, I mean, there's like hype will be maintained in cannabis because we've got this little pop up of like a new state coming online and everyone in that state are fucking, it's so exciting and new. But other than that, totally agree. And psychedelics are funny because these like adaptogens and these like functional mushrooms that have popped up that are not psychedelics, but are like living in that space between.
Exactly.
They're like the CBD of psychedelics, right? Like the stuff you can order over it. And it's on one hand like super fucking confusing, frankly. I think as a journalist trying to wrap my head around it and explain it to people, I needed to understand all those terms myself. And I'm seeing like really psychedelically branded products that just contain like ashwagandha or whatever, but I think they're preparing for the release of more psychedelic allowances, and then they'll have this awesome brand and whatever in place. But it is just like CBD brands getting out there that then essentially become cannabis brands. There is a lot of people that are messing with psychedelics. I mean, Cookies has like a functional mushroom product out now. Did you see that?
Yeah. I just saw that. And, you know, I think that's what kind of sparked this too. It's like, all right, there are so many ways where they, both the cannabis and the psychedelics, quote unquote, industry can feel like parallel, like you're saying, sort of preparing for this like big wave of the CBD rush or something, you know. But yeah, I'm curious to see what happens. I'm curious to see if there are any more psychedelic podcasts that pop up. I love, obviously, too, that combination of the two, if it can be done in a way that feels gentle or that's like fun and liberating and therapeutic for people. And so that always comes to mind too when I think of the future of weed.
I remember talking, I think it was Jim Belushi, the guy that has a weed operation in Southern Oregon. When I was interviewing him, he talked about, like, you know, his brother, John Belushi, super famous comedian, overdosed on heroin, I think. And he is very sad about the state of drug addiction, and like in his wildest dreams was like, I would love to literally work with police departments and give them cannabis that they could swap with, like come in and like no questions asked, just swap your hard drugs for cannabis. And it's like, man, wouldn't it be beautiful? Like that's a legal thing to give away. That's not breaking any laws. I'm sure like federally, yeah. But you know, in theory, that's like a not crazy concept.
No.
It is crazy, but it shouldn't be crazy. And now that we've got these other forms of psilocybin and psychedelics being legalized, like, man, just imagine if we could exchange these hard drugs for like medically supervised cannabis and psychedelics, like what benefits we could do for the mental health state of so many people.
That would be such a beautiful.
That's one of my weed fantasies for the non-future.
It's a good fucking weed fantasy. It's so necessary. There was so much hope, right, when a lot of research in the research that we have, not a whole lot, was done about the effects of both cannabis and other psychedelics on addiction. Mm-hmm. I know that cannabis was such a huge contester for that in the, you know, in the medical days, in the early medical days, I guess I should say. Ah, that's a beautiful hope. Can we do that already? The mental health of humankind is declining quickly. Yeah. And I think we need something more than just like investors caring about the future of psychedelics and weed.
Truly.
Sorry to get so dark.
No, I mean, I'm going to get darker. Because things got kind of dark this year, and we had that truly death of an employee. Yeah. Like, that was really dark. That employee that was in, you know, she was working in the joint rolling part of a facility, had asthma. There was tons of keef in the air. Filters weren't being cleaned regularly. A lot of different factors. But ultimately, like, it contributed to her asthmatic reaction that resulted in death of a girl in her mid-20s.
So tragic.
So tragic. So scary. So real. Kind of an unexpected, scary thing to arise out of legal weed. Like, you know, all we thought we were going to be worrying about is overdoses and kids getting into weed. But we're, like, learning that there's more to cannabis safety than accurately testing and dosing out cannabis. Like, it's a lot more than that. And so I think safety in general is going to be something we all will have to get more used to talking about, because for so long, I think everyone in the weed industry had a really knee-jerk reaction to anyone suggesting cannabis is dangerous in any way, right? Like, it was like we were already fighting for cannabis just to be taken seriously as a potential medicine. It was like, no, you close your mouth. You shut your mouth. Cannabis is fine. You will never, no one's ever died from weed. And it's like, okay, sure, yeah, but like, we still need to make sure weed isn't getting into little kids' hands. Like, we still got to be responsible about it. And the reality is, we have failed. Like, the industry chose these fucking plastic heavy child safe packages, but they didn't think about how, like, if they're so complicated that adults don't use them, adults are just going to dump them out of those packages and store them in Ziplocs in their apartments. And we've had like a spike in kids under five getting into weed. Like, we've fucked that up. It was not child safe packaging. Like, they should have been more about, like, educating, like, up and out of reach. I had this come up recently, which is why I've been thinking about it a lot, in a Broccoli report that I did with 40 Goods. It's a company that they sell locked furniture, basically.
Yeah, like, I've seen those around. They're gorgeous.
Pretty nice pieces that have drawers and cabinets that have, like, a sweet app-controlled closure. And she's doing really well, like, very popular products. They are not cheap. And that was so interesting to me that this product, like, had a lot of customers and a lot of interest. And I'm like, okay, people are adapting and, like, really responding to solutions to this problem that, like, we don't really like talking about.
But it's true. There is such, and I have been that person, being overprotective of cannabis in itself. You do forget sometimes, like, how important, you know, consumer rights are and safety rights, period. I think that's what consumer rights are. And, you know, I've been on the other side of it clearly when it comes to things that you can or cannot say when you're naming a product and packaging and et cetera. But I think the closer that we sort of can be more realistic about it, the easier it'll be to kind of fix these, tinker, I guess, rather, these things that we're working with. Because it's still a fucking new industry, and it's still an industry. It's not just the plant-touching aspect, but it is the regulation. It is the way that it integrates into our lives in the long term. But yeah, let's touch on cannabis banking reform. Let's talk about descheduling, rescheduling.
Yeah, we got to hone in on that a little more. We do. I get asked a lot, like, when I have interviews or have reached out to other sources, like, they want to get chatty, especially, like, newer people in the industry. Like, so what do you think? What's your prediction date? Like, it's something we're all betting on in the office. And I just laugh because it's like, man, absolutely no time soon, frankly. Like, the cannabis banking reform thing maybe will happen, but that may or may not have any real impact. Like, all it's going to do is say, hey, we won't prosecute you for serving a weed biz, but it doesn't mean they're going to serve weed businesses, like, hand over foot.
Or if they do, it'll be taxed, like, times a fucking billion.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They'll take, like, two clients a bank. But I think in a perfect world, the goal is descheduling, right? It's like not needing to schedule it at all, like fucking green tea or something, right? But are they going to do that? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Now, interstate commerce, that I'm realizing I think could happen, like, way sooner than we think.
I see what you mean.
The interstate thing is interesting to me because I in my research for the Broccoli Report, I'm just going to keep saying that until you guys all subscribe. There was a particular dive from Politico that pointed out in Maine medical system, I think, there was a case where there was a residency argument of like, you know, typical thing. Somebody is applying and saying, I think your residency requirements are bullshit. Let me apply. Mm-hmm. And I'm from another state and let me still apply here. And the court ruled in their favor because they cited some line in our Constitution that basically says that kind of like not letting people from a different state operate a business in your state is illegal. Like in the Constitution, a line we wrote like, you know, a long time ago that was just like, let's just make sure there's no discrimination mm-hmm. between like mm-hmm. Oregonians and Californians in general or something like that. But y'all, if that won that case, I kind of am afraid that that is going to not only impact all residency requirements, but the other part of this phrase is that it would technically be a reason to say that state by state weed laws are unconstitutional, that it's illegal to not let states do business together. So all, you know, it already won one case in a small, you know, Maine court. It would, how much more would it take for that to win on a bigger scale? And all of a sudden, interstate commerce just be totally legal because they are like, oh, I think it was illegal for us to ever do this in the first place, which would probably be easier than getting all of Congress to federally deschedule and legalize weed.
That's an interesting.
I know. That's why I'm like, holy shit, that just might be possible in the next few years. A little freaky because the bad guys are going to be the ones that will be right. fastest and quickest to act on that. And we'll probably have a canopy growth in every state in a minute or, you know, whatever the equivalent.
The equivalent, right.
But yeah, something interesting that I do think is actually more likely than legalization.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. This is about the future. Now I want to play some bets. Just kidding.
Although in non-legal states markets and just like red states in general, there is a lot of weed stuff happening in regards to Delta 8 and yep. THCO, hemp-derived THC in a bunch of different forms now. And at first, I was really hesitant about all this mm-hmm. because it just, you know, was in that unregulated space. It was in that ultra cowboy, literally no one's legislating anything. And
It was wild.
And less oversight of testing and blah, blah, blah. And like, turns out there is yeah. some people doing some legit stuff. And it's like, okay, the people that are being legit are actually providing an incredibly needed service in states that, yeah, literally don't have access to weed. We had somebody reach out and share that there's a solventless Delta 9 THC that's like a really popular product in North Carolina.
Hmm.
Folks who've had bad experiences with Delta 8 or even dispensary gummies have really enjoyed that like ratioed balance THC-CBD
Yum.
With the Delta 9 THC. And they got high, but less of the crossfady, woozy feeling that people can sometimes get from Delta 8.
Right.
And more like legitimate THC flower. And like, that's good that they can access that. I would rather have them getting that than scary vapes freaking ordered online from TikTok or whatever.
Yo, facts. The innovation, I think, too, hopefully it's the exciting side of the extreme rise of CBD, I guess the like saturation rather, is that we have been able to see so much innovation when it comes to, okay, what can we do here with what we have? Like Mariah says, I'm going to do the best I can with what I got.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And seeing those hemp-derived cannabinoids really taking on the roles that people want and being able to, like you said, remove that, ugh, that crossfady, heady, whatever weird vibe is so strange. And so being able to achieve something better. Yeah.
Just do your research. There's still definitely some highway vape shop negative energy that's like just
low vibrational vapes.
Making shit and selling shit. And people should always like research where it's coming from. Talk to the people you buy it from. But ultimately, I've kind of been coming around to the trend. Yeah, I get it. I see how it fits into the weird ass cannabinoid universe we have across the US.
Yeah. And so I'd like to, in honor of you, my Pisces sister, Lauren, I want to slip into the slip and slide, sparkly sort of aspect of our wildest weed fantasies. Do you have one in mind?
Ooh, yes. I mean, yes. I have like a shallow one and a deeper one, of course. Some sentimental soapbox. Wishes. I mean, to start, I will say my weed fantasies are quite simple as far as what I would love to see in the industry personally, which is just chill consumption lounges. Like, yeah. Every announcement I've seen for a lounge opening this past year has been so extra, so Vegas, like celebrity founded, so like expensive and showy and fancy, and they want like full, like our five-star chef and serve seven course meals. And it's like, nah, I really just want to see places pop up that have like comfortable semi-private seating.
Yo, that part.
An espresso machine and Wi-Fi. Like, give us the Amsterdam coffee shops. That's like not a ton to ask. We don't need a multi-million dollar build out. We really don't. I think you guys would make a lot of dough.
Yeah, we just need caffeine, comfy seats, and some plants surrounding us, like literally.
Yeah, little fans in the corners. You got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. I like the fans aspect. You always thinking of the smell. Always thinking. Well, wait. What's the deeper fantasy?
I mean,
don't get shy.
Just freaking building the industry we want to see, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like consumers really activating and feeling empowered to support the businesses they want to see thrive. I can describe a utopia that I experienced in this small window of the medical industry up here in like 2014 when I first got my Ooh-hoo. My medical card. It was this really pure chapter where like there was zero outside money in the state because it was not allowed yet. And there was no lure for them. Like, we had a really modest sized medical population mm-hmm. that wasn't growing with tourists or anything like that. There was zero advertising allowed. There was like no one was spending money on interior design because they were still kind of scared of getting raided. So they didn't want to draw attention to themselves.
Right, and invest so much in that.
And so it was purely about the weed. Like, every single dispensary was experientially interchangeable. The only thing that made them different was location, bud tenders, and the products.
Yeah.
And if any of those things sucked, they failed. It didn't matter how deep the pockets were. It didn't matter who owned them, how connected they were. They failed. And the businesses that lasted through mm-hmm. whenever everything changed with legalization, like, if they were open, that meant they could be trusted. Like, it was this beautiful, I joke that like I got to see a truly free economy.
Yeah, free market.
Free market, yeah. The consumers, if we didn't spend money there, they didn't survive. And so I just felt like trust and power as a consumer. Like, if I walked into a shop I'd heard about on the street, it was just instant trust because I knew that they'd earned it. And I believe that we can feel that again, but it will require all of us to like really make our purchases for good, really make choices every time we spend money.
Yeah. I mean, spending our money politically in whatever way that feels right for you politically is so important. Yeah.
I know. That just across the board.
100%.
Across your board. Weed, food, clothing, everything in your life, frankly.
Yep. Services, et cetera. You know, I have to say there is some sparkle of good news in the future, although this is actually kind of sad. I'm thinking of Brittany Griner, who just was released, I think, today or yesterday, the basketball player who was caught with a cartridge or whatever, and the
yes.
Russian police have arrested and have had her in prison for 10 months.
So glad that she's coming home.
So glad and so disappointed that that's where we're at, even globally. I don't even know if I can talk about like the globe all being, you know, united when it comes to how we see cannabis. That's a true fantasy, but it's shocking. And I think, you know, I would love to see a world in which that does not have to happen. But I have a fantasy that is like a little bit more TVMA, you know, a little bit for a mature audience. And I think...
Oh, a fantasy.
You know, like a weed kink fantasy. No, it's not. It's more sensorial. I think in, again, true honor of my Pisces friend and podcast host and sister in this, I think that something with like water, but yes, the opportunity to like get out of the water is so important in this fantasy, in this slip and slide fantasy. You know, I'm thinking mineral baths, I'm thinking of like little you know, those cigarette stands from back in the day with the ashtrays. I would love to have some of those, you know, like close by to some sort of watering hole. The sun is shining. Yes. Like,
oh my God, we're talking about a weed friendly water park right now? No.
It's going to get weird. Here's where it gets a little bit weird, and it's not quite TVMA, but I also like, I don't know, I'm thinking about the future beyond metaverse, but where like humans take form in different ways, you know, where we're really like, maybe some of us have like gills and fins and I don't know. I mean, I just...
Oh, we're going full Avatar. I love that.
I'm sorry, y'all. Like, stay with me.
Wait, where does weed factor in?
So where weed factors in is where it's sort of like this sacrament in the beginning of the water activities, or sort of like intertwine with them, or even just like grown in these little pockets of where there's grass and things are growing from the water that kind of remain still in certain areas. And it's just, it's a like natural pool weed wonderland of like part human, part water creature. Sorry, y'all.
Oh my God, Amenle, you're literally just describing a fantastic sci-fi novel that you need to write immediately. Like, no one is allowed to steal that idea that is listening to this. I'm out here talking about shallow, like, weed consumption lounges, and you're imagining, like, another timeline in another universe. It's beautiful.
I mean, what's not beautiful is, like, when you think about the kink aspect, like, how does that work? I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet.
This is like a we're turning into a Shape of Water conversation.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So I thought you would like that.
I love that. Mermaid stoner fantasy forever. Actually, it does remind me, I had a fantasy for a weed blog before I knew what a weed blog could be. It was in like 2014, 2015, and I, you know, Piscean, I like really wanted to create a blog that was like weed and makeup, and the voice, the anonymous voice of the blog was going to be a character that emerged from the Mariana Trench, because I was just really fascinated by the Mariana Trench existing right off the West Coast, and... So actually, very full circle, Menle. I never brought that creative concept to fruition, and then those makeup weed blogs just started actually existing. What was that? It's nice, but nice paper, fucking nice paper. But man, I love that. I love that. We obviously need to create some aquatic based weed content.
I'm thinking so. This is the first time I've ever expressed this aloud. Everyone listening will probably be shocked. Who knows me? But I think, I don't know. I want to see this like makeup and weed blog, because that's, you're onto something.
Oh my God, now it's done. Now they've done it, I'm sure. I have no idea.
I mean, I don't know. In like a TikTok format, but is it in a blog format? You know? We'll see.
We're out here planning our next chapter.
Planning our futures.
God, it is surreal. We kind of just keep talking because it's strange to figure out how to end this episode with y'all. It's certainly a sorrowful farewell for now.
Yeah.
Well, it is about that time, and it's been an amazing time.
So good.
I have never really felt like I was a podcast host as much as I felt like I had a standing sesh with friends.
it's been a dream, and to work with both Jay and Anya and obviously you, Lauren, and in community with all the Broccoli Bays, it's been a fucking dream come true. And we have, I think, experienced so much together as a community of Broccoli Talk folks. I don't know what we're calling ourselves, but that's what we are for now. Getting through the fucking pandemic or not, or still being in it and
seriously
experiencing, you know, all the ways in which that cannabis just intersects with our lives. And so we love you. We're grateful. We cannot wait to see what the future holds.
And I've had so much fun processing the past couple of years with you, Menlay. And we thank all of you for tuning in and inspiring every episode.
Yep.
Thank you so much to our editor, Jay Nathan, again, for making every episode sound as good as it does.
Thank you, Jay.
And for, I mean, smoothing out so many conversations that ended up going three times longer than necessary. thank you to Giselle Garcia, who made our incredible, wonderful segue music that I imagine gets stuck in all of your guys' heads as it does in mine. It's just a soundtrack to my day when I walk through doorways.
Iconic.
And thank you to Citron Studio for making our very cool art and icons that I still want to get tattooed someday, Menlay.
Ooh, I'm down. Let's do that. That's the future of weed.
Thanks, y'all, and we will see you out there in the weed world.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.